change. The courage to change things that happen. And the wisdom to tell the difference. God calls on us.
Are there any AA announcements from the floor? The group would like to specifically welcome newcomers to AA. Anyone new to the group or new to AA, please raise your hand if you would like so that we may welcome you. Go ahead.
I'm Diane. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Diane.
Nick, alcoholic in the group.
Hey, Nick. Welcome.
Michael, alcoholic.
Hi, Michael.
Hey, Michael. Welcome.
Doug, alcoholic.
Hi, Doug.
Hey, Doug. Welcome. The group strongly suggests sponsorship and working the 12 steps out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you have any questions about sponsorship, please see any group member after the meeting. Would all group members please raise your hand? We have free literature available on the table. If anyone needs a Big Book, please see the treasurer, Terry, or myself after the meeting. Our seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting. At this time, we will be passing the baskets. We welcome everyone to please attend our business meeting on the last Monday of each month following the meeting. So that's tonight. The church requests that smokers please use the provided containers and not leave cigarette butts on the ground or in the parking lot. We ask that use of the church is limited to the bathrooms, which are located to the left of the front door or through the fellowship hall and to the right. So out there and there and then through there. Please feel free to stay after the meeting for fellowship. The church will be locked at 8:45. Please turn off all cell phones at this time. We ask that your movement during the meeting, you limit your movement during the meeting, especially during the speaker's talk. And I've asked Michael to read the preamble.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
And I've asked Mike to read the 12 steps.
Okay, Mike.
All right, Mike.
Mike, I'm an alcoholic.
Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for the knowledge of His will for us in our lives and the power to carry it out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
And I've asked Tammy to read the set-aside prayer.
My name's Tammy. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
Dear God, please set aside anything I think I know about myself, about my illness, about the Big Book, the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, the people in the fellowship, and all spiritual terms, especially you, God, so I might have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help me to see the truth. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Autumn R. from Lansdale Big Book.
Thank you. All right. Oh, is it going to fit? Yeah, okay. I'm Autumn and I'm a recovered alcoholic. I don't know if this ever gets easier, does it? I feel like I have, like, every time I'm asked to speak, I have, like, first of all, it's an honor, because, like, 7 years ago, like, I would, like, I was the person that would, like, steal your money and help you look for it, right? And I'm not ashamed to say that today, because there's somebody out there that feels the same way as I do. But, like I said, it's always an honor, right? But every time I'm asked, I have, like, this, like, pit in my stomach, right? Because it's, like, it's so nerve-wracking getting up here, especially with this thing, this microphone. And, but I don't want to drink, right? And, like, sure, if I would have said no, am I going to drink right now? Probably not, but, like, I don't want to risk it. I was always told to, like, say yes to AA and walk through this fear, because on the opposite side, it's, like, God, and, like, crazy things happen. And, like I said, I am a recovered alcoholic, and I am, like, the hopeless variety that they talk about in the book. And I'll kind of get to that later, but, you know, God is totally present in my life today, and it's so crazy to watch it all unfold. And, you know, I just want to, like, throw a disclaimer out there that when I share, it's, like, my experience. It doesn't have to be your experience, but I think that's a cool part about, you know, AA is, like, we don't all have to have the same experience because we share the same disease, and that's enough. Like, we all suffer from the symptoms. But my experience is my experience, and I love to share it because I, like, almost died getting here, and I didn't think that there was another way out. I prayed that there was another way out, and I tried every option there was, and I could never find it. I always looked in the wrong places. Like, I always looked in a bottle or a bag or a boy or money or whatever it is. Like, I have a disease of more, and it will not stop. Even sober, it does not stop. I am obsessive about everything, right? Everything I do. Yeah, just a disclaimer. Like I said, it's my experience, and I just share it. Hopefully, I can help the next alcoholic who doesn't ever want to drink again. Because the reality is, for me, I'm going to drink again. I lost the choice to drink, to decide if I'm going to drink again. So I have a sponsor. She knows she's my sponsor, who has a sponsor. And, I have a lot of women and men in my support group. I've been through the 12 steps, and I still continue to live the 12 steps. And I do take men and women through the 12 steps as well. You know, growing up, my mom, I'm kind of just going to explain, like, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, because I think that's important too. Like, you know, I don't want to get into how many DUIs I have or whatever the case is. Like, I want to talk about the disease and, like, my experience with the disease, because I think that's important, right? Because if, like, I can't relate to someone else out there, how am I going to help them? And my sole purpose standing up here is to help the next alcoholic when I get sober. So let's see, my mom was an alcoholic. She's the type that has, like, that wine, that glass of wine or the wine cooler, and, like, starts to dance and, like, starts to feel it a little bit. And she's like, "Oh, I'm gonna step away from that. I'm starting to feel it, right? I gotta put this down." And I was just like, "What? It's just, you're just getting started. Like, keep going." Like, I could never relate to that type of drinking. Even when I was super young and I'd watch the adults all drink, I'm just like, "What? Keep drinking, keep going, right?" And I was young. I didn't even know what alcoholism was, knew what alcohol was. And I definitely had the isms, but I didn't know exactly the depth and weight that it held on me. So my mom, yeah, just the wine cooler drunk, or not even drunk, the wine cooler drinker that, you know, has one every 6 years and feels funny when she puts it down. And then there's my dad. Okay, my dad was the hopeless variety drunk. Was in and out of this program. Never got sober, didn't have the chance to get sober because he died. But that type of drinking, I was so drawn to. I remember him drinking until he blacked out. And I used to think, like, yeah, that's what I want to do. That's what I swear. Like, I would watch my dad drink and think, that's the type of drinking I can relate to. And that's what I want to do. And like I said, I had this hole, this, like, I don't even know what you want to call it, this uneasy feeling from a very young age, and I couldn't put my finger on it. I remember watching movies and playing video games with my sister and my mom and still not feeling part of. And this was way before the first drink even occurred. Like there was something inside of me that was not right, and I tried to fill it and I didn't understand what it was. Like I used to think my parents didn't love me. How vain of me to think that this little girl, their parents, do not love this child. But that was me. Like, I couldn't feel it. And after, like, I've healed from the steps and I realized some things, like, it was I was surrounded by that love. I was just shut off from it and I couldn't feel it. And I couldn't receive it because there was something more inside of me. There was that isms, it was alcoholisms, it was the bedevilments at a really young age, and I couldn't feel God's love around me, even though it was. But I would tell you until I was blue in the face that my parents didn't love me because my dad chose to drink and my mom chose to work all night long, right? But it was alcoholism. So so I grew up like that, and my dad, like I said, my dad was the hopeless variety, and he would drink until he passed out anywhere. And I didn't know, and I thought he was choosing to do this. That he was choosing alcohol over, you know, loving and supporting his family. That wasn't the case. He just lost the power to choose whether he was going to do it or not. And, I remember one night, like, my dad got really, really drunk, and he put his hands on my mom and almost killed her. And I didn't understand at the time why a person would do that. Like I said, I thought my dad was choosing to do all this stuff. Whether what you believe or not, like, I know, like, alcoholism aside, my dad wouldn't have done that. But in my experience, when alcohol is in my system, I'm a completely different person, right? Even the first time I drank, so the first time I picked up alcohol, I was a completely different person. My mom's mom and my dad's mom both passed away within 27 and a half hours from each other. Something inside of me told me to go get drunk. I was 13. I was 12, 13. What tells a 13-year-old, go get drunk, you'll be okay. You'll feel better. Just go get drunk. What is that voice? What is that, right? That's not normal. And nothing said, don't do that, Autumn. Don't do that. I said, absolutely, I'm going to do that. So Autumn goes and gets drunk for the first time. It wasn't the first time I had alcohol, but it was the first time I got drunk. The first time I had alcohol, I was like 9, and I thought it was water in the fridge, and here it was vodka. My dad thought it was hilarious that I drank vodka. But that was the first time I had alcohol in my system. My first drunk was that night that both my grandmothers passed away. My solution wasn't to talk about it. My solution was to go get drunk. And I sure did. I got drunk, ended up in the bathtub because I was unconscious and they couldn't wake me up. So there I am going to the hospital at 13 years old with alcohol poisoning. And I realized last night, I was thinking about it. My first drunk almost killed me and my last. Like, that's crazy to think about. So I ended up in the hospital, and the ambulance who picked me up was my cousin. And I didn't know at the time. I didn't know that that's who it was. He asked me my name. I said who it was. He said, how old are you, Autumn? I said, 18. He's like, no, you're not. I'm your cousin. Like, no, you're not. And I didn't believe it. I didn't want to believe it. So my parents come. The guy gets arrested. Because for me, there's always a guy involved. And it was never just a boyfriend. It was a hostage. Because I suck the soul out of people, whether it be my mom, my sister, the boy, the whatever. I suck everything out of them because I have alcoholism, and I don't know that that's what I'm doing, but I'm doing it. So my parents come. I was like, wow, I'm going to get in really big trouble after I, you know, come to. And my dad's laughing hysterically on the way home, I remember. And my mom's crying. You know, my dad's laughing because his 13-year-old daughter just got drunk for the first time and ended up in the hospital. In my brain, that said, Dad, that I'm allowed to drink. Dad thinks it's funny. But my mom was bawling her eyes out because she didn't understand what she was up against with, like, her 13-year-old daughter. And I didn't drink for a while after that because it got me in trouble, and I didn't want to end up like that again. But I didn't know, like, you know, I still had a long road ahead of me. Like, I was only 13, and I still had a lot of options I had to exhaust. You know, I remember in school I would have friends, but I didn't feel a part of. I never have felt a part of. And it was just this void inside of me. And like I said, I tried to fill it with playing sports. I tried to fill it with guys. I tried to fill it with money, with working, with, you know, all this different stuff, and nothing would fit inside of it. And I didn't understand that that's what I was doing. So yeah, I didn't drink for a while. Like I said, that got me in trouble. But for me and my story, outside substances, it is what it is. I smoked weed for the first time, and oh my God, did I arrive? I was like, what is this? This is awesome. I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I'm going to sell it. I'm going to grow it. I'm going to live it. This is me. I finally found something I was a part of. It didn't get me in trouble. I didn't really do anything, right? I maybe ate, but like, whatever. I didn't, you know, mind you, I was still maybe like 14, 15. But I said, I'm going to do this until I can't. Like, I remember the first time I did it. It's so crazy that, like, you remember that for me. Like, I remember these points in my life, but like, I can't remember who I stole from, or I can't remember like these things, but I remember these turning points in my act of addiction. And so yeah, I'm in high school now. I'm going to the doctor because I have depression when I'm not smoking. So for me, I have a lot of, you know, so I thought I had, and this is just my experience, I thought I had a lot of, you know, these bedevilments disguise themselves as maybe I'm depressed, I'm anxious, so I have anxiety, and I have PTSD from my dad, and I have, you know, all this, I have bipolar, so I'm in and out of like therapist's office, and you know, I'm talking to them, but nothing ever seems to just quite work. Psychiatrist, I'm in and out of counseling at school. They probably know I'm troubled, but they're just like letting it go at this point. And, you know, the doctor, then I hurt my back playing sports, and the doctor prescribed me, you know, pain meds. And that was my first experience with that. And again, something happened inside me. I had a spiritual awakening. Every time I would do something, I had this spiritual awakening inside of me that was like, this is it. This is how you're supposed to live. And it worked for a while. You know, the drugs and alcohol worked until they didn't. It happened very quickly for me. Like I said, I was a hopeless variety from my first drink. And so thankfully I graduated high school. I don't know how that was, but I did. I thank God I got my cosmetology license to do hair. And, you know, again, for me, the guys and the drugs and the sex, they all go together because I have the disease of more. It doesn't matter what it is. It just disguises it differently. And I remember graduating high school and, you know, I was proud of myself because I did it. And it was maybe weeks until I moved out. And then it really got bad. You know, I became unmanageable on the outside very, very quickly. I didn't pay my car insurance. I didn't pay my rent. Even though I signed that lease, and I swear I was going to pay that rent. I swear to God, I was going to pay that rent, right? First came around, never paid the rent. Had to move out. Lost the car. Lost the job. Couldn't stay sober. And all these outside things just kept happening, and I was so unmanageable. And at this point, I picked up some other outside substances, and I was doing them in every day. I was an every day. It didn't take me long until I was an everyday drinker, because I would wake up and I would feel so uneasy. And you know, I do know now they're called the bedevilments, and I would wake up and I would have these bedevilments, and I would have to feed that monster, and I would do whatever I had to do to feed that monster. As long as it meant Autumn didn't have to feel like that, she would feed it. She didn't care. And like I said, it didn't take me very long. And I had to move back home. And then I'm in my first treatment center. Finally, like, see, those outside that outside unmanageability, I never really cared about it. I didn't have a place to live. All right, well, I knew somebody I could stay, right? There's some couch I could stay on. I didn't have a job. Well, I can make money doing something, whether what it is. I got it. I can make money. Didn't have a place to eat. I can call somebody. I could sleep somewhere. Like, none of these outside things bothered me. And the first time I felt unmanageability come from the inside was what really made me go to my first treatment center. Couldn't stay sober. I couldn't control my emotional natures. Nobody wanted to be around me. I didn't want to be around anybody else. I was isolating. I just didn't want to feel the way I was feeling on the inside anymore. And I had a slice of desperation, but at this point in my active addiction, I wasn't ready to look at myself in a way that I needed to be able to do the steps. Forget any step work, forget any meetings. I wanted to do the things that Autumn wanted to do to stay sober at this point. So I was sadly mistaken that that's not how you stay sober for me. So I go to my first treatment center, White Deer Run Allenwood. I don't know if anybody knows. It's up on this big hill. Like, you ain't AMAing. Like, it's going to take you 3 hours to walk down the big hill. Like, you're up there. And so I go in, I get checked in, and the nurses and the doctor knew my dad. So I was like, oh, okay, this is really where I'm supposed to be. Like, they know me. Like, it did so much for my disease because, again, like, my disease disguises itself in different ways that I don't even know that that's what it's doing. So, you know, like I said, I felt at home, out of rehab. Like, what? Nobody admits that. Like, come on. I go to my first rehab, and I swear that I have a problem with just drugs. Just drugs. Not alcohol, not marijuana, just drugs. So I say, okay, I'm not going to do it anymore. Like, you know, I got a little bit of desperation to push me into rehab for the first time. And that's where I discovered this thing. And I remember it being on my coffee table at home with my dad. And I never really knew what it was. I thought maybe it was like the Bible-ish. Like, I knew it was important because I would see in intervals. And then when he was drinking, I wouldn't see it. I didn't grow up with this, but I knew exactly, like, oh, maybe AA, right? So this was the first time I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. So what I did was, and we stayed in cabins. So, like, you had to walk up to your cabin. And I was with, like, a couple other girls. So I go up to the cabin. I go to the 12 steps. And I write down on a piece of paper what each step meant to me and how I was going to apply them in my life. Showed my counselor. I said, I'm ready to go home. Please send me home. I did the 12 steps. She kind of just looked at me like I was crazy. Like, I had, like, seriously? She knew I wasn't done. I knew I was done, but she knew that I was way from getting sober because I still wanted to do things my way. And at this point, I didn't know that, like, the root to our troubles is selfish and self-centeredness. And, like, we have an ego, you know, and all this self inside of me. And I didn't know that that's what it was. I used to hear in meetings, like, if I could just stop drinking, I would be okay. Disregard everything else. But if I could just stop it, if I could just learn how to say no, right? If I could just play the tape through. Or if I could just stay away from people, places, and things. Like, I tried all this stuff. But I listened to them. At this point in my active addiction, I was like, okay, whatever. Maybe I'll try all this stuff. I go home. Couple months later, it didn't take me very long. Because for me, this is like kind of how my disease works. Like, I have a mental obsession, and then I have the allergy, which then sets off the craving. For me, my mental obsession maybe looks like, well, I can just go smoke one joint. Like, I could just do it once. Just once, right? So I go home, and with enough, I may have went to, like, a meeting in there, and I remember them reading the story in the back of the book, and it was, like, almost like my life, and I was like, oh, I was in the back of the book. Like, how'd they even know? Like, again, feeding my ego, not understanding the depth of this disease. Like, I really thought that story was about me. But what now I know what it did was it planted that seed for years later. I knew when I was actually ready to do what it takes to stay sober that this is where I would find it. And but I wasn't ready to do whatever you guys said. Like I said, I go home from treatment, and I have maybe like a week, 2 weeks tops before my mental obsession starts. See, I thought it was the people, the places, and the things that would get me drunk every time. But it wasn't. It was my mental obsession. My mental obsession would talk. It would start at like maybe 2, 3, like the volume, like almost like a radio, right? But after 2 weeks, 3 weeks, that radio is on a 10. And I just can't do it. And I can't do it anymore. And it's talking to me. And I will do anything it takes just to shut it up. Anything. I don't care what it is. I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll do it. And then I would drink because I lost the power of choice. See, I thought it was just about saying no. Like if I could just say no, I'll be fine. If I could just learn how to say no to that first one, I'll be fine. But I lost the power to even do that. And I didn't know that that's what it was. So now my mental obsession gets me to pick up every single time. I could have 10, 15, 20 years sober. And if I stop doing this, my mental obsession is going to come back and I'm going to pick up. So I pick up. Now I set off this allergy. And when they told me it was an allergy, I was like, no, like you're allergic to strawberries, you break out in hives, right? But us alcoholics, we drink, we could break out in handcuffs or we break out whatever, you know what I mean? Like we just have an abnormal reaction to something. Like I think about like how my mom drinks. That's not my reaction. My reaction is I want more. I'm ready to go. So now I drink, I set off my allergy, and now my craving starts. See, I can't, for me and my alcoholism, I can't crave something after 72 hours. What I'm experiencing is my mental obsession. It just looks like different things, but it's not the craving. For me, it's my mental obsession. It gets me to drink every single time. And I didn't know that's what it was. I would go to meetings and they didn't really talk about that. But again, like I look back and maybe my ears weren't really open to something of that nature. So I drink again. I have to go through every single option. I try moving out, drinking on the weekends, breaking up with this guy, dating this guy, maybe going to college. Oh, maybe that's going to fix me. I start the course, and a week later, I have to go to my second treatment. Like I try to like fix all this outside stuff, and I didn't even think that it was internal. Like, I thought I drank because my dad beat my mom. I thought I drank because I'm from Bloomsburg and BU. And, like, I thought I drank because, I don't know, because I couldn't hold a job. Like, I thought I drank because of all these outside factors. And I drank simply because I'm an alcoholic and I like the effect of it. And I'm so selfish that that's what I want to feel all the time. That's why I drink. It's not the people I hang out with. It's not the places I go. It's me. I take me with me. If I look at the common denominator in all my life, it's me. I moved different places. I moved to Tennessee. I still drink. Like I move, it's me. And I didn't know that. You know, and I mean, I could sit here and tell you, you know, I've been kicked out of this bar and I've been arrested and I've done all this stuff. But, you know, just because you've been arrested doesn't make you an alcoholic. Right? It makes you a criminal. You know, just because you've done X, Y, and Z, it doesn't make you an alcoholic. What makes you an alcoholic is if you have a mental obsession and your disease has progressed far enough that you don't have the power to choose whether you're going to drink or not. You just drink and don't understand why you've picked up again. And like I said, it took me a long time to really feel that powerlessness. And I remember, I'm going to fast forward to my last drink. Like I said, my first drink almost killed me, and my last almost killed me. My last run, I remember, I overdosed, and I literally watched my life like a movie. It was the strangest thing ever. And I watched it from when I was a little girl up until that point in my life, and I swear I can't make this shit up. This is so crazy. And you know, I was so unsatisfied with where my life was. So unsatisfied. You know, and at the end, like I told you, my grandmothers both died 27 and a half hours from each other. So at the end of this, I wake up, or right before I woke up, my grandmothers were like, Autumn, you're killing yourself. Look at you. And I woke up. I wasn't high anymore. And I was so mad. I wasn't mad that I overdosed, right, and almost killed myself. I was mad because I wasn't high anymore. And I was mad that, like, I still lived. But, like, I was pushed into a point where I wanted to stop drinking and getting high so bad, but I didn't know how to. I knew I was going to drink again. You know, and I've tried everything, and I was pushed into what they talk about, like desperation, and this turning point where my hands are up this time. You know, I've tried everything. Tried everything. And here I am, and I don't understand why. So here I am. I go to treatment one last time. Every time I would go to treatment, I really wanted to be sober. I just didn't want to look at myself the way that this book makes you. I didn't want to look at my selfishness. Like, I didn't want to look at my ego and my fears. And, like, I didn't want to look at who I was mad at. Like, you know, that's the reason why I drank. I don't want to look at me. You know, it's their fault. But like I said, that last go-around pushed me to a point where I was ready. I was just willing. And I had the window of opportunity, and they talk about it too. Like, for me, like after going through the steps and in my own experience, like as we sponsor people, some people have a window of opportunity where they're just ready to go to treatment. And for me, when I'm ready to go, I drop everything. I quit the job. I call the boyfriend. I do everything I need to go to rehab because I have a couple hours, maybe a day or two. And if I don't go, then I'm not going. I need to go right this minute. And that was my window of opportunity. And thank God the forces were at B because I got to go again. No idea why I'm going. No idea. Because it doesn't work. This stuff doesn't work. Rehab doesn't work for me. I'm on my fourth rehab. It doesn't work for me. I don't understand why I'm doing it, but whatever. I'm going to do it. So I go to rehab. I detox. And they were like, oh, sorry, we don't have any more beds. And I was like, well, I can't go home because Bloomsburg is my problem. Can't go home. Can't go to Bloomsburg. I'm going to get drunk. So they were like, why don't you go to Wilkes-Barre? I was like, okay, cool. It's a half hour away, 45 minutes away. I'll be good. In my head, see, I'm still trying to run the show. I have about a year. I'm going to go to rehab. I'm going to go to the halfway house. I'm going to go through the steps. Then when I'm cured, I'm going to go back home and say, look at me. Don't be mad at me. I'm sober. Clearly, that was not the plan. 8 years later, I still haven't made it home. So thank God. So I go to rehab. And I don't know. Something was just different. Like I said, that inside, that unmanageability really got me because I wanted to kill myself and I couldn't even do that. And I remember going into the treatment center really just with open ears and an open mind and an open heart because I needed to get sober. I was literally to the point where I was going to die. And for me, to drink is to die at this point. Even still today, to drink is to die. I don't know how long I'm going to last out there, but I know I'm going to die eventually and I don't want to die today. So I go to rehab and I start to like hear some things, and they say, do you want to go to a halfway house? And I was like, well, sure, why not? That sounds good. You know, how long? They said like 2-3 months. So I go to this halfway house after my rehab, and I walk in, and there's like 30 girls just looking at me and staring at me. I was like, oh God, this is not what I want to do. Half of them are on parole and probation, and I'm there willingly, right? So I think. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to do this. Because at this point, I don't have a solution and I'm not through my steps. I have enough God's grace to keep pushing me forward because my step one, like powerless and unmanageability, like I practiced that out there. For me, I knew I was powerless over alcohol and my life was unmanageable way before I went to rehab that last time. If I didn't think that I was powerless or unmanageable, I wouldn't have went. So for me, my step one, done. I internalize it. I know I'm an alcoholic, and I know I'm going to drink again. And I know I've lost the power to decide if I'm going to drink or not. Even though my brain tells me, you can decide. My disease, I cannot. Like I said, so I've done my step one. And I know something can save me, or I wouldn't still have been there. I would have went home a long time ago. I don't really know what that power is. At the time I didn't, and I still kind of really don't know. I have like principles and stuff, but I don't really know, but I still continue to go into this process. And so I'm in this halfway house, and they do a book study. And this was the first time the book was presented to me in such a way that I was so curious on what was in here. Because the lady said to me, she goes, I have good news and bad news. Like, not to me, but to the group. She's like, what do you want first? And I was like, well, I don't know. So she's like, the bad news is you're going to drink again. Flat out, you're going to drink again. If you're the hopeless variety drunk, you're going to drink again because you lost the power to choose. The good news is you never have to. So me, I'm like, okay, well, I never want to drink again. So what do I have to do to be able not to drink again? And she read these bedevilments to me. And, well, she read it to the group. And she said, think about it when you wake up that next morning. What is your brain like? And she read these. She's like, we were having trouble with our personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotion, our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of our uselessness, and we were full of fear. We were unhappy, and we couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. So that's me without a drink. That's me every single day when I wake up without a drink. And I was like, whoa, but you're not like that anymore. See, something about her was so attractive that I just wanted whatever she had, and I was willing to do whatever it took. And I asked her to be my sponsor, and she's like, unfortunately, like, I don't have the time. Like, I'm a school teacher, you know, I'm just going back to school, X, Y, Z. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I always get what I want because I'm a good little alcoholic. So I go back to my room, and I do the 4 steps as outlined in the big book. And I do it, and I showed it to her, and she was so surprised. She's like, I'm just, what's your fist step? So I had to work for my sponsor, my first sponsor. She was a very big book. She was a big book thumper. And, you know, that's kind of where I get it today. But she did not give me her opinion. Like, she gave me the raw truth about alcoholism. And I appreciated that because she didn't try to make decisions for me. Right? Her only job was as a sponsor was to put my hand in my higher power's hand. So then I can make my decisions after seeking my higher power. And, you know, and that's what she did for me. She took me through my steps at a fairly quick rate. But I think God knew what he was doing when we did this. Because, so I do my, you know, we go through steps 1, 2, 3, 4, make sure I understand, she qualifies me, make sure that I'm ready to get sober, right? Because if the sponsee isn't ready to get sober, we're really just wasting our time on them, to be honest. Like, if they don't have the willingness and they're not honest with you and they don't have that desperation, I don't know if it's going to hold. But she saw that I had that, so she started me through the work. And, you know, I couldn't tell you the moment that I stopped thinking about a drink. It just happened, right? And I remember I went through the work. I made amends to my stepdad and, you know, a couple easy people. And things started to, like, my life, like, I felt a little bit lighter. Like, I don't know how to explain it. I wanted to help people. Like, I wasn't getting angry as fast. I wasn't as full of fear. I'm still full of fear. Still full of fear right now, right? But, like, God's doing something that I can't explain. And so, like I said, I make amends. And I made, like, 2 or 3 amends. And then she finished my step work. And I'm living in 10, 11, and 12. I'm in this halfway house. Couple months sober, going to rehabs with her, speaking, and even though it's crazy that, like, I was put on the fire lines that early, but it showed me that that's what I needed to do to stay sober, and that's what I needed to pay it forward, because I can't keep it without giving it away. And so this whole time, my dad is still drinking. My dad is still drinking, and something inside of me is telling me that he doesn't have long left. And I call him. He's crying. He's drunk. He's so happy for me. But something tells me, just listen. Don't do anything but listen. This phone call happened maybe a handful of times. And finally, I get a call that my dad's in the ICU and that he drank himself and now he's on a ventilator. So here I am through my steps. Mind you, I'm through my steps. And the only way that I made it past this trial is because I was through my steps. I have to stress that. So God knew what he was doing. God was doing what I couldn't do for myself. So I get a call that my dad's on a vent, and I have to go make the decision to take him off the vent or not. And at that point is when I realized, oh, my God, I don't want to drink. And my dad's dying of alcoholism, and I don't want to drink. There's a lot of pain, and there still is a lot of pain. Like, I still grieve, right? But something is happening inside of me. I don't have the obsession. My higher power removed my obsession to want to drink in order to be of service to other people. And at that given moment, I was being of service to my dad because he was dying of alcoholism. And I was probably like 3-4 months sober in the halfway house. So I made amends to my dad. I put my coin in his hand, and he started to cry. So I knew that he knew that he died when I was sober, and I knew he knew what I was doing. And maybe like another couple hours, and we pulled the vent off, and he didn't make it. And you know, like I said, my dad was like, I was 4 months sober. My dad died of alcoholism, and not once did I want to drink, because I was so surrounded by people in AA and people in this program that cared enough about me to keep telling me the truth. To keep telling me to keep going to the meeting and to keep going to that rehab and keep living in 10, 11, and 12. And, you know, they didn't tell me it was going to be okay. They told me, you're going to drink if you don't do this. You know, they didn't pat me on the back and, like, baby me. They told me the raw truth about this disease. And, you know, I'm so grateful that that was my experience, because I probably wouldn't be here. Because I like to think I outsmart everybody, right? Like, I like to think I outsmart people, and I outsmart my counselors. And, you know, I remember before I got sober, I was seeing this psychiatrist, and I could tell you like a list of things that he said I had: bipolar, PTSD, multiple personality disorder, depression, anxiety, right? Like, and I'm not saying that those things don't exist, but for me, that was untreated alcoholism. I was untreated when I didn't have a drink, because those things didn't exist after I drank. They existed when I would wake up in the morning and had nothing. And so I find a primary care doctor after I got sober and everything, and she's like, she's asking me about this stuff. She's like, so do you still feel this stuff? And I was like, no, it was untreated alcoholism. She's kind of like, what? I'm like, okay, and kind of disregarded it. But like, the steps healed me in a way that I can't explain. Like, it's really the power of God. And so I move out of the halfway house, go to a sober house. I'm about 6 months sober, and I start thinking, right? That's my problem, I think. And I start thinking about myself. And I'm like, am I ever not going to think about myself? Like, I'm so selfish to the core. And my sponsor at the time, I'm 6 months sober. She's like, well, you're through your steps, right? She said, well, yeah. She's like, well, why aren't you sponsoring? I'm like, I'm 6 months sober in a sober house, and you want me to sponsor? I don't have anything to offer. I don't have a car. I can't take them to meetings. I'm making $8.25, making subs at Subway. Like, I can't. I don't know what to do. She's like, Autumn, it's not about you. It's about the next person. So I am open to sponsorship at this point, right? And I was like, okay, God, if you have somebody, like, I'm here. And the neighbor, you know, next door to the sober house, he was like head counsel or something, and his sister lived with him. And his sister was an alcoholic, not sober. She was going through it. So he comes over, knocks on the door, and said, you know, I know this is a sober house. My sister can't stay sober. Can you help her? And I was home. All right. So now it doesn't matter. I don't have a car. She lives next door, right? So I can literally meet at any time of the day for this woman. And, you know, God just makes you of service no matter what is going on, as long as your own house is in order. So when I started sponsoring, I would say my perspective on this program really changed. Because so the steps, like, they get me through, right? And they remove the obsession of a drink. But for me and my alcoholism, if I'm not sponsoring, that obsession of self doesn't get removed. You know, I think about myself way too much. So when I'm taking other men and women through these steps, I don't have the chance to think about myself, because I'm thinking about you, right? And it's truly a blessing not to think about myself, because I spent my whole life thinking about how I felt and how I didn't want to feel this way, and how I tried to, like, fix my life and rearrange my life because I wanted to feel a certain way. And, you know, I didn't think that there was ever a solution to my problem. And, like, you know, I'm a firm believer, is once we know the problem and we understand the solution, we never have to drink again. And sitting here, we never have to pick up another drink again. But like I said, if you're anything like me, you will. So sponsorship removes that completely. And it's insane, because, you know, and as I take other people through the steps, they're like, I have nothing to offer. And I'm like, just do it. Just do it. And I didn't understand, really. I'll be honest. First time I took a woman through the steps, I did not understand what I was doing. I said, let's read this book, right? So I took her from step one, and I just read it and explained it, read it and explained it, read it and explained it. And that's what I did. And I didn't understand it fully until I was through it. And I was like, oh my God. So like, if you really don't understand what's happening, just keep moving your feet. Because if we move our feet, our brain will follow. What they say, like, move the body, the brain will follow. Like, that truly happens. Like, recovery is on our feet, not on our heads sometimes. And you just have to keep, for me, I just have to keep pushing through and pushing through. And so at this point, I'm in the sober house, right? And I'm still with the second guy, the second hostage in my story. And but there's something he's not doing, because like, he's losing his job, his parents are kicking him out. Like, there's stuff going on that like maybe I don't know about. And so I end things with him, because I'm fully submersed in this triangle and in this program, and I'm living and breathing this thing, and I don't want to drink, and I will do anything it takes to keep my sobriety where it is. So we break up. In the meantime, he goes to rehab, and I get my own place, and now I'm really scared. Oh God, Autumn left to her own devices. Autumn has to pay bills. She's going to drink. Like, she doesn't pay her bills, right? Remember that first lease that I signed? I never even paid the first payment. So like, I was so scared, but I just walked through that fear, walked through it, surround myself, keep living and breathing in this program, making my amends. And, you know, and I remember like I heard the speaker tape. I think it was like Sandy Beach or Chris or somebody said, because like I was all feared up about financial amends and stuff, or financial, like my financial insecurity. And they were like, well, where are you at with financial amends? And how can we expect financial freedom if we don't make financial amends? And I was like, oh, that's how that works. Because it's not even my money. So then I start making financial amends, and things just happen when you live in 10, 11, and 12 that I can't explain. And so the second guy, he gets sober, and we move back in with each other, and everybody's like, oh, hold your horses. Like, I don't think this is a good idea, right? But, and I share this part of my story is because in the book they talk about if we have solved the domestic, like, problem, we should share about it. And, you know, I say this all the time. Two dead batteries don't start a car. But two people who are through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful relationship, and I wouldn't change it for the world. And, you know, so he moves in, he goes through the steps, he meets some of the support group, and he gets sober. And now we're both just going to treatment centers and going to meetings, and it's a blessing. And we got married a couple years later. Like, we moved back to the Philadelphia area and got married, and people didn't think that would happen. And, you know, that's just one of the gifts that this program has given me. And so in the meantime, I go back to doing hair, what I went to school for, and I found my passion again for it. And God blessed us with a business. That's like a whole, whoa, like God's trusting me with this business. Talk about like dividing your ego from spirituality and spiritual principles. That's a whole nother journey that I've been on, and it's definitely been challenging. Like, it's definitely not for the weak running a business, but I just try to do it on spiritual principles. Like, some of my values in my business are first things first, you know, and then you know, I forget what the other ones are, but I take a lot of the AA principles and use them in my business, and things are working. And so when I first took over the business, and I kept the name, and it was Pizzazz, and I was like, okay, well, I don't have time to rebrand, so I'm just going to wait, right? So a year and a half goes by, I hire some girls, and things are working, and finally we're rebranding, and I was in the process of getting a sign made, and I go to the salon and have a class with the girls, and I walk out, and the sign was hanging there. And it was just such, and I'm going to get emotional because it just happened. Like, it was such a God moment that it came full circle that I know, and I'm like a full example. Like, if you live and breathe this program and you do what you're supposed to do, you're going to stay sober, and the remarkable happens. Like, you can literally have a life beyond your wildest dreams. Like, I did not think I could be 8 years sober up here talking to you guys, going a whole hour. Man, I stressed over that, right? I stressed over the hour completely. But like, something happens in this program that I cannot explain. And when I saw that sign, I was like, oh my God, Wow, like this is truly a blessing. And I used to think like, you know, like I used to struggle with, well, is this God's will? Like, am I using my own will? And, you know, I don't really know the difference between my will or God's will. I don't want to do something wrong because I really don't want to drink. And it's not really what it's about. Like I used to think too, like wake up and have like cereal or eggs for breakfast. What's God's will? Tell me, just tell me. But it's not like that. It's, are we being loving to people? Are we being kind to people? Like, are we paying it forward? That is God's will. And the rest, we have our own will. We're strong-willed people, and we're allowed to use it. It's just how we use it, right? And are we carrying God with us in all that we do? And I used to struggle with the God idea. I remember when my first sponsor asked me, like, what do you believe in? And, you know, and I used to tell her, and I, like, you know, I was like, yeah, this is what I believe in, but I struggle if other people don't. And she was like, okay, but she knew I had a beginning. And that was the most important thing, that I had something. It didn't have to look like her God. Like, my God doesn't have to look like your God or your God or your, like, it doesn't have to. That's the cool thing about this program. And I've really enjoyed the spiritual journey of this program, that it's just so personal to you. And I started to do yoga and meditate more, and, like, literally, this is only the beginning, too. They promise us the best years are yet to come. And I'm just, like, speechless, because it just keeps getting better. And like I said, I really didn't know what God was. And I want to share this because, you know, I know a lot of people struggle with the God idea, you know. And this program is very spiritual. It's not religious by any means. It's very spiritual and very personal. And something called from Emmett Fox really helped me break down what God was and what God wasn't. And I just want to read this a little bit. So it's called The Seven Main Aspects of God. And if you've already heard it, that's cool. But this just really helped me on my spiritual journey, because I used to look at, like, you know, the God on the cross and with the beard, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can really get down with that. Like, it just doesn't sit right with me. But then I would feel bad because I didn't believe in that way. But, like, so these are just, like, principles that God has. And what you could do, too, and what I like to do is I like to, you know, every time a problem or a situation arises, I kind of, like, sit down, recenter myself, and I think about some of these principles, and the answer will come. So, you know, the seven main aspects of God. God is a life. God is truth. God is love. That's a really powerful one, because if you can meditate on God's love, like, that's the most powerful thing in this world, I think, right? God is intelligence. God is soul. God is spirit, and God is principle. So, like I said, I used to say that this is exactly what God was for me, and, you know, if you don't believe in it, well, it's your loss, because I believe in the actual God, right? And you don't. But this really helped me break it down, and now I really just know that God is. Period. I don't have to finish the sentence. God is. And, you know, I'm definitely living proof that this program and God exists. Because, like I said, I was not the person you would want to ask to speak. Like, I was the person you ran full force away from. And you didn't invite me to any of your parties or over at your house, because I'd raid your medicine cabinet. Probably go through your purse if it was available. Like, I would suck every person dry, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and not give it back and not think twice about it. So for me, this program has definitely changed my life completely. And I could say that I've never thought about a drink in the last 7-8 years, but I'd be lying. But I could say I've never obsessed over it. I've never obsessed over that drink since I got sober. I think about it and it comes and it's like, oh, but then it goes away. It's weird. It's like only like a fleeting, like, little thing. And because there's a solution. And I sat in AA meetings and they never talked about the solution. They talked about their cat, their marriage, or their dog, or their job, and I'm not saying you can't talk about that. That's really good, but, like, we got to talk about the solution as well, because more people need to hear it, I think. And, you know, like I said, I was taken through the steps with a big book thumper, and this is cut and dry for me. And if it's not in the book, take it with a grain of salt, right? I mean, things are awesome and opinions are awesome, and maybe they work, maybe they don't, but for the hopeless variety drunk like myself, I can't afford to listen to people's opinions because it could get me drunk. I can afford to listen to this book because a book can't lie to me. And I never thought that my solution would come from a book. I looked in a bottle. Like I said, I looked in a bottle, a bag, a boy, sex, money, gambling, you name it. The gym. Anything. I looked for it. And I keep looking for it. But that's like my disease, right? Like, it's a spiritual spiritual journey, daily spiritual practice. And you know, I wake up every day an untreated alcoholic. You know, I wake up and I pray to God, whatever that looks like, and just ask to be of service. And like the job and the business I have now, like sometimes it hurts, but I'm not in business for myself. I'm in business to help these girls succeed, or I'm in business for my family, or like I'm in business to help other people. And I truly believe that. Because after having the class today with the girls, I just was like, this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to help these girls. The rest is just extra. Money comes, right? And there is a solution. And for me, this has been the only solution that has worked. So if you never want to drink again, ever in your life, we can talk after the meeting. But if you're anything like me and you don't have a spiritual life, you're going to drink again. And I hope that I hope that you don't, but I'll be praying for you. That's all.
The group would like to thank Autumn again for sharing her experience with us tonight. The group would also like to remind anyone in need of a sponsor to please see someone after the meeting. Would anyone who is working knowledge of the 12 steps please raise your hand?